You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello! And welcome to the first Talking Snooker episode of 2024 with Phil Haigh and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone. Hope you had a good break, good Christmas, New Year, celebrated accordingly. And it's straight back into the snooker, really, isn't it? It feels weird. Maybe I get too engrossed in the darts at this time of year because that finishes and then it's a big one on the table.
Well, you say it's talking snooker, we say that, but actually we've been talking darts, haven't we, Phil?
Yeah.
Off air. What snooker, as far as we're concerned? But we're buzzing a bit. We've just been watching Luke Littler, this extraordinary teenager, this 16-year-old that's completely taken the sporting world by storm in recent weeks, dominated the festive period. We've just seen him reach the World Championship final, which is one of those where it's maybe UK-centric to some extent. I mean, he may well have broken through where you are. I know he's doing good bits, I'm sure, in other parts of mainland Europe that follow the darts, and maybe beyond as well, but certainly here in the UK, massive. You actually have to take a step back and think about it more and think, 16, nearly 17, but still 16, reached a world final. And what we were just saying then is his standards are relentless. We've seen this from various snooker players over the years, haven't we? We often mentioned John Higgins for that recent tournament. He never let up, did he? Well, so far, with the final still to come, he's not really letting up, is he, Littler? We're just saying, Rob Cross, you were mentioning his average, very good average. He's come second by four sets. He's lost 6-2 against a guy that's just playing extraordinary darts. I mean, you're more of a darts man than me, certainly, Phil. You must be absolutely thrilled with what you're seeing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, you think this is a 10-plus average. It happens so often nowadays when it didn't used to, but it happens a lot in shorter formats than this. It's still quite, well, maybe not rare, but certainly not common in a world championship, but he did it four times in six games already. I think I heard Wayne Mardle on commentary saying James Wade, who's been to multiple semi-finalists, been one of the best players in the world for 20 years near enough. He's never hit 100 average in the world championship and has done four already. It's, it's baffling stuff. And I was thinking about comparing to snooker a bit. You know, Hendry's the youngest world champion at 21, but he had a few cracks at it at first. That was far from his debut. It takes some building up to win the biggest events in most sports. And even this one, you know, Van Gerwen's the youngest to win the PDC World Championship. He was 24 when he did that. I think that was his seventh go at it. So just to be strolling through it on debut is, it's amazing stuff. And I'm sure there's a few people listening who don't really follow the darts normally, but have tuned in because of Luke Littler, because I've spoke to a lot of people who've been like that.
Well, and the viewing figures are bearing testament to that. Funny enough, I saw Eddie Hearn, and obviously he's a big part of Matchroom, big part of the whole operation there, with the darts on Sky. But, you know, he's been tweeting out today some massive viewing figures. I mean, only Premier League football, frankly, is doing bigger business for Sky than this. I mean, this is, and heaven knows how many watch this final now on a cold, dark winter's night in the UK. Probably quite a few. Obviously, it's on pay television here. But nevertheless, you know, even despite that, the numbers are terrific. I would think could well be north of 2 million, to be honest, for that final coming up. That's how much good business it's doing. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, you think about Ronnie winning that UK, of course, 30 years before he's just done it again at 47. He did it at 17, didn't he? He had that very nearly 18 thing, the same way Littler's very nearly 17. But obviously, you know, he is actually, you know, literally 16. So, you know, that's the line that, of course, is going around the world. Boris Becker, when I was a boy growing up, winning Wimbledon, extraordinary achievement. Very different sport, of course. But that it's almost that fearless thing as well. Of youth, isn't it? We've seen that with certain snooker players over the years. He doesn't seem to be worried about anything, not worried about mistakes or pressure or that arena. We will get back to snooker in a minute, folks. our regular punters thinking, this is not what we signed up for. I hope it's not a sign of things to come in 24. It won't be. We just are sports lovers, aren't we? So we've just seen it. But, you know, it's a bit like we've just come off that. Yeah, we do those Sunday after finals and we're buzzing. We're really buzzing. We've just seen it. So, maybe one more word on this each. But, yeah, it's that fearlessness, isn't it? He's like, this arena's not bothering me. The attention's not bothering me. He's made some mistakes, of course. I say he. Maybe his team advising him made one or two. And maybe if they'd had their time again, they wouldn't have maybe courted so much media attention. That's maybe not for me to say. But I wouldn't say everything's been perfect. But his darts have been pretty near perfect. And as I say, that fearlessness of youth, Phil, that'll go. That's a guarantee. So when he's got it, use it, eh?
Well, yeah, because it seems at the minute watching him now, obviously the first time that most people have seen him, I had seen a bit of him before. But it just feels like, well, he's just going to win everything forever now. Obviously that never happens, but cash in while he can. Because everything's perfect in terms of mentality, and you said like calmness and fearlessness, and you know, it's just his action looks so good. Like it's robotic, but it's nice to watch as well. Like it's just the perfect mix. Just ridiculous stuff. And there's not often with sports like darts and snooker that you feel it's sort of a wider national coming together to watch it. And it probably wasn't quite like that tonight, but it felt like it on social media and people texting me about it and stuff. I saw a lot of people tweeting, I've not watched the darts for years, but glad I turned on tonight. And it's great for sports like the ones we cover to get that. Obviously, that's huge. And, you know, he's got a big year ahead of him. Whatever happens on Wednesday, he's going to be the centre of attention in everything coming up. Are they going to put him in the Premier League and stuff like that? Almost certainly yes, with the viewing figures so far. But that's big. He will be 17 then. It's pretty big stuff. It's amazing to watch.
It is, and I mean, it's not the only sign by any means, but I did get news alerts from the BBC and the Guardian tonight to my phone about the darts, and I never thought that would ever happen, Phil. I never thought I'd ever get a darts alert on those. So, and yeah, I don't think the media coverage has actually been the most mature at times. Actually, I think, I mean, you know, my view is, should have covered him in very, very big fashion in terms of making it a big story, but he perhaps didn't need to completely dominate the whole tournament. But anyway, that's another matter. It's an incredible story. That there's no getting away from that. He's in the final. That's to look forward to. I'm sure many of you are watching the darts. In fact, I've seen some people say, big snooker people say they feel a bit left out because they don't like the darts. That's fine as well. You know, not everyone that likes snooker likes darts, but there is some crossover. And I know people that may be missing the snooker are tuning in. But we won't be missing the snooker for much longer, Phil, because the Masters is soon to be underway, switching right back to our snooker mode now. Getting underway this weekend in London at that same venue, Alexandra Palace, of course. They'll clear everyone out after tomorrow, after Wednesday. Get rid of all the darts people. Snooker comes in, and we can't wait.
Give it a thorough deep clean, I hope, after that.
That's to say the very least, yeah. Yes, I hope some disinfectant is being moved in. But I tell you what, I see the bloody the insects are as chaotic as ever. Darts players getting wasp bites, and so that's what we're going to get again, isn't it? And I'll probably find it funny, and then also get a bit annoyed as well. Say, why are there so many bloody insects? It's like Winter Watch, isn't it? The old Masters these days. So what was the referee one? I can't think of it. Mark Williams, wasn't it? All sorts of funny things are going on.
Yeah, Williams doing a quite a long dance away from a wasp last time. I mean, it is quite funny stuff like that, but it's not great. It's been going on for years. I don't know why they can't sort it out. Because if you're a darts player, if you got stung on your hand while you're playing darts, it's not ideal, is it?
It's not, and the only way I'd answer that, and funny enough, I was watching a bit of video today because they're restoring another huge part of Alexander Palace that's basically unusable. It's just so bloody ancient, that building. It must just be an incredible haven, and I would have thought to deal with anything like that would probably be four or five times harder than it were any kind of a normal building. But anyway, Masters, cannot wait, Phil. We'll look forward to it shortly. And let's just maybe wrap up a couple other snooker matters before we do that. And obviously, we had our Christmas special with Dave Hendon and how lovely that was. And then we also had our final episode of the year. We didn't really venture much into German Masters qualifiers. Maybe we should just address some of the headlines from that in those few days before Christmas. And, well, there was a few good lines, actually. I mean, Rianne Evans came so close to victory. I know a lot of people on social media were alerting me to this. Wasn't really watching it early on myself. And then I followed it quite a bit more. She was 4-2 up against Tian Pengfei, big chance to win. Ended up losing 5-4. There was a really good win for Scott Donaldson, beat Gary Wilson 5-4. And that was on the black in the final frame. And look at the score. Very tight match, that one. Well, it wasn't a tight match, Liam Pullum, Stuart Bingham. What a win for Liam there, winning 5-1. Breaks of 73, 80, 56 and 72 from him. And then, well, once he joined, that kicked up a bit of a fuss as well. He was Dr. Frame, wasn't he, for being late? Just late, but as various referees and people from the officialdom world have said, well, you know, rules are ultimately rules. And, well, it didn't actually affect the result because one beat Ding Junhui, very good win, 5-2. And Sid Wahier, of course, we know so well from that run at Sheffield now last year. Well, he beat Liu Haoshan 5-4. He was 4-0 down and came back to win. You don't get many of those to the pound, Phil. So lots of stories there. And, the first Your Internet Connection is Unstable of the year, Phil. Brilliant. Great stuff. First of many, I'm sure. And over to you. Maybe lots of headlines there, but at win for Liam Pullum. I mean, that's not going to give you confidence against a former world champion. Nothing will.
Yeah, that was the standout one for me out of a few. Yeah, I think you named them all there, really. It's nice to see Jack Shuresti doing well. I always like to see him doing well because he's had plenty of struggles. His win over Jack Zaska is very good. And I watched at the end, definitely, of Donaldson against Wilson, because that was, two or three days after Gary had won in Scotland, and he had to go down to play these qualifiers just before Christmas in Ponsforge, and it was late at night, right to the deciding. I think Donaldson came quite far from behind in the deciding frame to win on the black, and it just, it's constant highs and lows in this sport. As soon as whenever you hit a high, there's a low not too far behind. Some great results, and definitely pulling the notable one. It's encouraging this season. I said it a few times. We've been lacking sort of youthful talent coming through, but there are good signs for it. So, and Liam's definitely one of them. I don't know if you mentioned Ashley Carty beating Nopon 5-2. That was the only other one I had written down. He's been having a good season coming back on the tour, and Nopon, he'd just been in the final in Scotland as well. So good win there for Ashley. But some notable results. The big names, the biggest of the names go straight to the venue this year. So it wasn't quite the carnage of the previous year when almost all of them seemed to lose in those qualifiers. But they've gone, I think the top eight went straight there. But German Masters not far away now. Always one to look forward to.
Definitely, and it's 7 days now, isn't it, this time, for the first time, not five, so that's going to be a big difference. A load of snooker fans from all parts of Europe, really, really, you're looking forward to heading to that tournament again, one of the big favourites in the calendar, of course, at the Tempodrome, and yeah, we'll look forward to that. Now, Phil, in these few days before the Masters, lower key, but more snooker, the Championship League is back with us, and as you well know, probably as much as anyone, there are now more episodes of the Championship League in an average year than there are EastEnders. I didn't want to do that, gang, but you did text me, didn't you? You said, if you don't do it, I'll be furious. You don't get furious very often, but you said, that's got to be on the agenda, please.
I wouldn't even come on the show. So you wouldn't even know how furious I was. I wouldn't be it.
And if you would do that, utter nonsense from me. Underway in Leicester, of course. It's a couple of months. I looked and the actual conclusion of the event is early March. So, yeah. As ever, a bit of a slow burner. And, well, look at the first day results, Phil. And Ryan Day's on to a bit of a flyer.
Yeah, four wins from four. Yeah, so it's Day, Karen Wilson, Wakelin, Nopon, Gary Wilson, Bingham and Milkins. So, yeah, nice competitive group there. Tough to pick a winner looking at that. But Ryan Day started very nicely, 4 wins from 4, 3 wins from 4 for Kyron. So very good, solid stuff there as well. The only one with no wins, Rob Milkins, actually, just before the Masters. But they've got another day. We've only seen one day of it. So, yeah, there's the second day of the first group. Then we've got the second 2 days of the second group before the Masters kicks off. I always think the guys who are playing in the Masters, I'm surprised when they're not playing in these, because it feels like ideal match practice. And if I understand it correctly, the higher the rankings you get offered when you want to play. So the highest, so anyone in the Masters, if they wanted to play in the first couple of groups, pretty sure they can. So it just surprised me when they choose not to, because it seems like an ideal little bit of getting ready, you know, a proper match practice. But the likes of Kyron, Will, and then in group two, I think Selby and Carter are in, and obviously Milkins as well. So we'll see if that makes any difference when they get to Ali Pallet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we said it many times, you know, they're never going to be the biggest wins of the season, but we have seen before, you know, so there have been a couple of direct matchups actually from the Championship League going into bigger events, and the results do sometimes tend to be repeated. So, you know, any win you get over an opponent, you know, especially one you've got coming up, is going to be valuable in, you know, whichever form of the game it is. But of course, Phil, so the Championship League's underway in Leicester, and that will keep us going sort of in the in-between periods between tournaments. That tends to be the way it works, doesn't it? But of course, our main priority is the Masters. Now, I'm aware we've been going a number of years now, so probably going over old ground, you know, more than we need to. Brilliant tournament, goes without saying. Every standard ticket sold, absolutely brilliant. The atmosphere is going to be, you know, wonderful every day, every night. And that's just, you know, I think as you put it recently, probably in our last one of the year just gone, actually, that's the way the year kicks off is the way we like to think of snooker at its best. I think it's a great way of saying it, actually, with big crowds, the best players, spine-tingly atmosphere. As I said once, not so long ago on here, someone from the officialdom world of WST said to me, you know, if they were introducing someone to snooker for the first time, they'd now take them to the Masters. I'm thinking, well, I probably would still take them to Sheffield, but I know what you mean, because there's something about that arena. It's such a, you know, pure show business, and it's going to be such a buzz, isn't it? I'm hoping to get down there, up there myself. Is it up there or down there for me? Probably across there, Phil, halfway in between. Not far, anyway. And it's, yeah, so yes, I was saying on Twitter today, special building anyway, which we often forget just how iconic it is. You were saying you saw a band there not so, a few winters ago, which you love, but it's a great place, and it's just got such a special buzz at this time of year. Darts finishing, and then our beloved snooker moving in.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's become a great home. For the Masters, obviously Wembley beforehand was a great home, and a lot of people didn't think it'd get topped. But some people have changed their mind and feel like this is the new best venue for the Masters. I'm sure still a lot of people still prefer the old one, but this is very good, no doubt. Yeah, I had I think it's 2016, I think. I was up there every week for a bit, going to the darts and the snooker, then going to see Slipknot there. So it's a very versatile venue, three contrasting events that I went to see there, but all very good. But yeah, that walk up there, lovely views, underrated little bar in there as well, which you can go to before or after, or even during the match if you want to pop out for a frame. So yeah, no, it's great to look forward to. And what I always enjoy watching it is how much the players are absolutely buzzing about it there, because they do the interview. Obviously, that's the benefit of a one table setup as well. They do the post-match interviews just by the table. The crowd's still there. They can sort of keep cheering along. We don't get to see that too much, really, other than like after finals. And they're just, yeah, the smiles on their faces. Even, you know, we've referenced this a load of time, that classic Higgins-Williams one. You know, they've seen it all. And even those two were like, bloody hell, this is next level stuff. So, yeah, very special tournament, very special place.
Yeah, quite. And the recent example of that, which might have been last year, actually, I'll put a clip up. I absolutely loved it. It was if you could sum up Rob Walker and Barry Hawkins as characters, it was that. Rob was very much like, what a performance, Barry. You were absolutely brilliant. Oh, this crowd's absolutely loving it. What an afternoon. It's absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? Barry was like, was it? So low-key. Oh, was it? Oh, brilliant stuff. It really was. I didn't do it justice then, totally, but it was so funny. Let's start with Sunday afternoon, Phil. Luca Purcell, Jack Lazowski. And maybe I'll have a first look at this one then. Well, Luca won 6-4, actually, when they met at the Players' Championship last year, having a look at their results earlier. They never really met in many matches of great depth, to be honest. Best of 11 is the longest. And it's a hard one to call, actually, to be quite honest. I mean, Lazowski has maybe been a bit better than it seems. I mean, it's been quite a lot of downbeat talk about him, but he's actually been in one quarter, one semi this season. It's not that bad. I mean, I think we're used to obviously very high standards from him. I had a look at the 1 year list. He's 19th on there. So, you know, it's not dreadful by any means. And Purcell is 38th on the 1 year list, to put that in perspective. And he's not really been at the races at all. Said it all about world champion. You know, it's happened since time immemorial. It's happening again, which I'm a bit surprised about, because I thought some of those early signs were he wasn't going to be too shackled down by it, if you like. But that hasn't proved to be the case. He's not really fired yet. We are broken records, because we keep saying he will. He definitely will. Whether it will be now or not, it may well be. I mean, Sunday, I think anything at the Masters, is any slot is great. But that Sunday afternoon slot is a bit special. It's the first match. It's often the champion, not always. It's not always the champion. I think they weigh up various factors as to whether it's better to put the champion on or not. And obviously, judge the champion. The judge's got a very nice slot coming up later in the week. They maybe think that's better for telly or whatever. And Luka Jakuzowski is a, you know, great attraction. Let's be clear. They're very exciting players. And let's hope for a lovely audience on the BBC and Eurosport coming up on the first day of the tournament. But there is that big occasion feel about it. So maybe just a bit of a hunch. I think Luka might play better than we're expecting. And you know, could maybe be a bit of a turning point for him. It's going to happen sometime. Why not here? But yeah, hard one to call, Phil. I say that. I mean, they all are. And but yeah, it's a bit crystal ball. I wouldn't like to be an odds man. I wouldn't like to be out like our friend George Wayham or Richard Mann having to decide this one for their punters. Tough one, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think I did have a look, and there's nothing in between. I think Purcell is the very marginal favourite, but you wouldn't be putting money on that with any confidence, I don't think. Yeah, Lazowski, like you said, he's got himself in a weird position now, because there's this whole thing about when's he going to win his first. That almost whenever he loses at any stage, then it's just like, oh, well, another one where he hasn't won it. So he can actually sort of be doing all right and having a perfectly decent season. But it still seems so negative, because every time he loses, it's like, there's another one gone, which other people don't really have to deal with. So, and, you know, that's just because this became a narrative quite a long time ago about, oh, when's he going to win his first? It seems like it has been going on for a very long time. But, yeah, he can sort of go under the radar in doing well. And, I mean, it shows by the fact he's in the Masters. You know, he's been in the Masters quite a number of times now, been a very regular face in the top 16 without winning something, which is an achievement in itself. So, yeah, I wouldn't be very confident either way, but Jack was weird last year. He looked really good at the Masters in his first two games, and then completely sort of fell apart against Williams. So pushed. Maybe I'd go with Jack, but yeah, not that confident at all. So I'll brush past that very lame prediction to Sunday night. And another interesting one. Well, they're all interesting ones, really. But Sean Murphy against Zhang Ander. Zhang, you know, not very long ago, no one would expect to have seen Zhang Ander in this Masters draw at all. Absolutely incredible, just emergence. English Open final, winning the International Championship, which is huge, and has catapulted him into the top 16. And weirdly, I mean, that was brilliant, but it was almost how he was playing at the UK that sort of kept cementing how good he was. He got the quarters. But he just looked brilliant there. And I imagine he's been working very hard over Christmas. And I expect him to play pretty well again. You know, these two have played a few times, but it almost seems irrelevant to do it because they haven't played it since Zhang Ander became the new Zhang Ander. So I don't know if that, you know, Murphy's got a winning record against him, but you know, it seems irrelevant now. Sean obviously started the season off great, winning the Championship League, but then really sort of gone downhill quite badly since there, struggled for results. I don't think he's played awfully by any means, but has struggled for regular wins. And I'm not sure what the odds on this one are. I suppose Zhang would be the underdog. And I think I'd be tempted by the underdog money there. He seems just so fearless and so so good at the minute. It's, I don't know if it'll last forever, but I imagine it's still going strong. But yeah, like all of them, you're not going to be that confident. But the one thing I thought Murphy will have a big advantage is Zhang won't have played in a crowd or an atmosphere or an environment like this very much at all. He's played at the Crucible, he's played in big finals, but it's nothing like this, whereas Sean loves this kind of thing. He's obviously won this tournament before. So if Sean can sort of settle quickly, if Zhang's struggling a bit with that, then that's a big advantage. But, you know, Zhang could easily win that one, I think.
Well, you might have left me something to say. How much of a favourite is Sean?
Massive. He's odds on, but 4-6, Zhang 6-5.
Right. Yeah. I thought that crowd thing, it's a bit of a cliche, the start being important, but I think it probably is in this. If Zhang can get into the game quickly, I think 2-2 would be great for him, that sort of thing. But if Sean has a bit of a head of steam and starts well with that, you know, his immense experience generally, but his immense experience of playing in this event with that crowd and big crowd generally throughout his career. But as you say, you know, the crowds at York are hardly small. You know, he's been at Sheffield, so he's not as totally unknown to having. This is a bit more of a bear pit than almost anywhere else. But yeah, I wouldn't have thought that would be, you know, if he just get a foothold early, something that really proves to be that decisive, probably in the long term. We'll see. I mean, as you say, Murphy, I saw, won their last match a couple of seasons ago at the European Masters, but Zhang's just gone up a level now, and he's just having that marvellous season. You know, he really is, you know, one of the players of the season, really. He'd be a strong candidate to be the player of the season if Judd hadn't had that amazing run, and it has to be Judd, frankly, but Zhang's, you know, knocking on the door of that status. He's been that brilliant. And as you say, not just winning, but I like the narrative of him getting closer. The English, wasn't it, when he was leading Judd in that final. Then we thought that would be a springboard, you know, for some time, maybe months in the future, who knows, or this season. But to do it that quickly and win a tournament, brilliant. And then backing it up with good performances since. So, you know, he's a proper prospect at the moment, and that, you know, he's offering plenty of evidence that he's here to stay, really, you know, the much higher level than he ever has been before. Yeah, Sean won the championship lead, didn't he? Say he's been a bit hot and cold since, you know, maybe more cold, actually. He reached one tournament quarterfinal. But I suppose the immense experience he does have at the Masters would make me lean towards Murphy. I can see why he is favourite, frankly, and I probably would lean that way. Monday afternoon, Ronnie, the afternoon slot. I think that was one of the listeners to Snooker Scene wrote in recently and talked about how long it had been since Ronnie hadn't had, you know, anything but this at the UK or Masters. And, you know, as Dave was saying, it is an advantage ultimately, you know. But I was thinking about this a couple of days ago and thinking it was ever thus in sport, really. I mean, we used to joke, you know, in various offices I've been in over Federer over the years, and we went over the top. You know, when would you like to play Mr. Federer? But there was an element of that in slams. You'd get the lovely afternoon slot, or, you know, he'd always seem to play, you know, on the Friday, not the Saturday, Wimbledon, so he always had more time off. And I guess that's ultimately what the very, very top players have earned through their brilliance. And it was ever thus. TV want the stars. They want Ronnie. He's on Monday afternoon. And I'm sure they'll have a lovely afternoon audience for it on the BBC and Eurosport. Ronnie against Ding. Well, I'm often saying how much they played, so I thought I'd look up. Seems like so many so far in the 20s. Well, it's 3 meetings in 2020, 2 in 21, 3 in 22, 2 in 23, and now 1 in 24. That's a lot, really, you know, when you think about it. There's so many matchups which they've hardly ever seen to play. And yet these guys play all the time. And Ronnie, of course, wins the vast majority of them. He was hammered that time by Ding in the UK, of course, not so long ago. But he wins the majority of them, including that recent UK final, which is a smashing match. That could have gone either way till late. And Ronnie just showed his pure class. I can see Ding winning, actually. I mean, it's hardly a rocket science comment, but he's that good. I can see him winning. I just think it's a bit of a mug's game to back that. I think Ronnie's... I think the best time to play Ronnie is probably first up. So if he's going to be cold, it'll be more likely this round. But I think his record at the tournament is so phenomenal. Easy for me to say, Phil. So phenomenal that I think I'm going to have to go with Ronnie.
Yeah, he's a pretty safe bet in the first round of most things. I agree with you. That is sort of the time you think you catch a cold, but he doesn't tend to get beaten there. You know, he's not lost a first rounder at the Masters since 2011. That's a lot of games that he's won since then. Whereas Ding, I looked at his one second. Sorry. He has lost. So he won it in 2011, so that's when Ronnie last lost the first rounder. Ding's lost 8 times in the first round since then.
Wow.
And he's not won a match at the Masters at all since 2019 because he missed the last two and lost in the first round twice before that. So I think when he was talking in York as well, when they were asking him about, he kept being asked about why he loved the Barbican so much. And he said just some venues suit, you just feel good, confident, and some you don't. And the one he said when he doesn't is Ali Pali. So he doesn't feel good there. Ronnie definitely does. As you say, I mean, it's not nothing extreme to say you could see Ding Junhui winning, of course. But yeah, I'd be going Ronnie all day long on that one, though. And the crowds will love it, I imagine. So where are we up to now? Monday evening, we have Mark Williams against Ali Carter. Not a bad one. Yeah, I had a look at their head-to-head. They've played loads in sort of short format games over recent years, the Championship League and the WST Classic, which Williams won. They haven't played sort of a long game, a proper game, since 2019, which is a bit surprising, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Williams winning in the Players' Championship. And I would say Carter hasn't beaten him in many big games for a long time. He did, like... ages ago, we're talking sort of 2007, 2008. But Williams has had the upper hand in longer games. And Mark, actually, we haven't mentioned that. I suppose this was going to come up in any other business, but he won that the second of the events in Macau over Christmas, which, of course, is an exhibition. But, you know, he beat Trump in the semis, and he beat Lasowski over a lot of frames, beat him 9-6 in the final. So it's not bad bit of match practice against very good players. It looked like a good atmosphere, quite flash. But yeah, he'll be feeling good. I'd lean towards Mark there. He's been good this season. That British Open win was brilliant. He doesn't tend to sort of string together loads of good performances in a row on a regular basis these days, but it's certainly in there. And he was superb in this event last year as well, running to the final. He was excellent. Throughout, but that game against Ronnie, superb. Even in the final that he lost, he was great. So, yeah, I'd go with Williams there.
Yeah, I think I would lean the same. It seems to go for a lot of the bigger hitters, but just finding it hard to make a case for these underdogs to do it. And really close head-to-head generally. First match 0-1, Phil, going back quite a while now. As you said, I wrote the same sentence down. You said had another long match for a few years. I'd actually forgotten that was part of Mark's run to his famous last world title in 18 that he beat Ali in the quarterfinal 13-8. And well, a little plug, Phil, because I don't want you to be shy and forget to plug it yourself. You're 23 for 23. I noticed that Ali was 9th and Mark 8th, so that, you know, felt about right. Most of them in your list felt about right, actually. And but that just shows that's the kind of years they had just gone. And that, you know, I remember saying in one of our episodes recently that I think the one with Dave, actually, there was that period in the spring where Ali was very much part of what seemed like a bit of a triumvirate there with Short, Sean Murphy, Bob Milkins, and him. He was knocking on the door a lot. So, yeah, he's a redoubtable character. We know that. But I just see Mark having a bit too much class, perhaps, on the day, maybe a bit too much know-how. if Mark's not firing on all cylinders, Ali will turn him over. There's no question about that. No question. And I can see it happening. But I fancy Mark might play well. Just a feeling. Big occasion, mate. Just tend to, as you say, did well in this last year. But I mean, he was absolutely daylight robbery that Robertson semi the year before, wasn't it? And he tends to go deep in Sheffield a lot of the time. He does well in these. You know, Martin Wieners have never just turned up, but he's a proper live contender for these still. You know, his age, you know, he's remarkable as all those three characters are in the class of 92. And I'm going to back Williams for that one. Well, we should say you are listening here to our Masters preview on the first Talking Snooker episode of 2024 with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. We're on to next Tuesday now, and well, another mouth-watering one. They all seem to be, of course. That's the beauty of the Masters. Judd Trump, Kyron Wilson. Well, Judd's clearly ahead in the head-to-heads. One thing I always think in Kyron's favour is he's one of those that's not at all overawed by Trump, really. I just worry, you know, is he playing well enough to beat Trump? That's the thing. You know, looking again at the one-year list, which I had a good scan down, it's always useful, but at this time of season, it starts to get really useful as a gauge. But he's 35th. I mean, you know, he miles down for a player of Kyron's quality. He's reached just one quarterfinal this season at the European Masters, whereas we just know what Judd's been up to. It's been remarkable, really. But I was also thinking, three in a row, that would rightly always get the headlines. But he's also been in two other finals, reached the semis of the UK. I mean, he's absolutely extraordinary. There can't have been many, many more than about 9-10 tournaments. There's six or seven now just named that he's either won or just, you know, come runner-up or got to the last four. It's a hell of a season. It really is. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Kyron's a marvellous player. Again, you know, probably go without saying, I can see him turning Judd over. Well, in some ways, I can't see it in this example because I'm not sure, you know, obviously a very good Kyron. And again, Judd's tipping off those standards, Kyron will win. But at the moment, just the way this season's panned out, I'm finding it hard to put together a very constructive argument for Kyron. It's Judd for me in this one, Phil.
Yeah, that all makes sense. The thing with the Masters is that you sort of, you know, there's going to be shocks, and you just have to sort of gut punt for them sometimes. But even though, like you say, it's quite hard to say why they would happen. Like, you remember last season when, that must have been the one you're talking about, when Rob was speaking to Barry afterwards, when Mark Allen was playing brilliantly, just won the UK Championship, then lost 6-0 to Barry Hawkins in the first round. And there's just, I mean, Lasowski beating Higgins round one last year, Hossein Fai coming in late replacement and beating Selby. It's just one of those where, like, everyone's so good, sometimes it doesn't seem like there's a logical argument for something, but sometimes you just got to punt on one because everyone's good enough to take chance if one guy's just slightly off it. But yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. But maybe just for the sake of going differently, I'll go with Kyron. I do like that he's playing in the Championship League. You know, you could have, if you play in both those groups this week, then it could be 4 days of playing really good players in great conditions and gaining some confidence and just sharpness, especially after the break over Christmas. I know those guys, Judge was playing in Macau. But yeah, maybe that could be something. But Judd defending champion, yeah. I mean, everything you said was accurate and makes more sense. But I'll just go with Kyron for the sake of it. I'm speaking to him tomorrow, actually, so maybe something will come out of that interview that I'll be able to put my argument into better shape.
Good man. Well, maybe I'll let you have first go at Neil Robertson, Barry Hawkins.
Well, that's a very interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, Neil obviously been away in Australia in what he hopes is a break that's going to turn his shocker of a season around. You know, it's been really bad. It's one of those where you wouldn't even say by his standards. It's been bad by almost anyone's standards. He's sort of in the 80s on the one-year list. So it's not just, you know, a bit worse than he would normally do. It's a lot worse than he would normally do. And he's hoping that a bit of rejuvenation by going back to Australia will perking back into action. And yeah, everyone would love to see that for sure. No idea if it'll work. That's not a guaranteed winner. I know he played an exhibition or a couple of exhibitions over there, so he's had his cue out, but I don't know how much practicing he's done. Whereas Barry Hawkins had really good season so far. He won the tournament at the start of the season, the European. He's been pretty consistent since then, semis, quarters, looking very strong. So on form, you have to say Barry Hawkins is the favourite for that. Just getting the bookies' odds up. Yeah, he's marginal, very marginal favourite. Robertson's only evens as the underdog. If Neil could just spring back into life, maybe he's right. Maybe it was he just needed to have that break and burst back into life. It could happen, could well happen. And he won this tournament 2 years ago. But around that, three out of the 4 years, he's lost in the first round. So it's very unpredictable, isn't it? I'll go with Hawkins, though, on the season's form, because there's really no comparison in that genre. That's not the right word. On that topic.
Yeah, both those matches that day are not dissimilar, actually. Tyrone Wilson and Neil Robertson are both marvellous snooker players, but on their season, you can find form from nowhere, but these guys are so good they can dredge it up. I mean, look at Gary Wilson. He's done almost nothing all season, won a tournament. Of course it can happen, but yeah, the one thing I would say is that I thought when Neil won it 2 years ago, I've forgotten which might have gone to Scandinavia, I think it was, but he's certainly been away and hardly played and looked quite shaky early on, ended up winning it. You can play your way into the Masters, but when you're playing someone like Hawkins, who doesn't tend to dip below levels. I mean, there are question marks, I think, over Barry's temperament, actually, when it comes to the very, very late stages of events and ability to get over the line in massive matches. But there aren't many question marks over his stickability, I think, in most matches. So, I mean, Neil's ahead on the head-to-heads. He's won the majority of their biggest meetings. Of course, he did, he won comfortably in that Masters final against Barry. This is a repeat of a final, of course, of 2 years ago. Barry's Masters record is no problem with that at all. Two Masters finals and a semi-final in the last decade for him. But Robertson's record is generally brilliant. I mean, you mentioned he's had some early exits, but he's twice lifted the trophy, twice been runner-up. So it just depends. How is he going to perform after his break? I think it improved in the second half of the season, but it has to be instant improvement, doesn't it? That's the problem. And it's quite a push to suggest, to think there's going to be instant improvement in the sort of bare pit of a Masters match. So yeah, I'm also going to lean towards Hawkins there for sure. On to Wednesday afternoon, next Wednesday then, John Higgins, Mark Allen. Well, Allen's slightly ahead in the head-to-heads there. They've played a lot over the years. But Higgins did win 6-5 when they were in the Masters 3 years ago. And I always think with John, he's got that funny Masters record, hasn't he? Where he has put that right to some extent recently, actually. He got to that COVID final, didn't he, when he lost to Yanbing Tao. But I think it's still only two, which is two victories for John. He's been going there, 30-odd times now, probably. So just by his, the fact how amazing he is a player, feels under, very much under what it should be. But as I say, he did get to a recent final. Allen's barely performed anywhere until he won the Champion of Champions. That's that thing again. They dredge form up, these guys. Then he won the shootout. So he's having a good season again, has to be said. Higgins is one of those, and I think we say the same thing for a few guys, actually, to some lesser extent, what we were saying about Lazowski earlier. I mean, John's obviously that level above, but unless John's sort of winning stuff or maybe even getting to finals, as he's been to loads of finals lately and lost nearly all of them, as we know, there's a sort of temptation to think, oh, he's doing nothing. But actually, he's 12th on the one-year list. He's been to four semi-finals, so he is doing quite a lot. He's just John Higgins. So we expect so much of him. Allen's the funny thing about him is he won it in 18, that famous win. I always loved that. I was there that day. I loved that final against Kyron Wilson, one of my favourite big finals of the last maybe sort of half decade or decade, actually. But since then, he's lost in the first round 5 years in a row. That is quite something. Loss, 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 loss. Amazing way to to sort of come off the back of a tournament victory. But the way my funny brain works, you sort of think, well, yeah, can you back a guy that's lost five in a row? I think law of averages, you can, Phil. I think that run cannot keep going on with someone as good as Mark Allen. So on that one, without enormous amount of confidence, I'm going to lean towards Mark Allen.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It can't just carry on happening. Five in a row is odd, isn't it? After winning it. Yeah, I thought they're head-to-head. You know, Allen got the two big ones in the last one, that Northern Ireland. No, so the Northern Ireland final. And then the champion semi this year looked like it was going to be a cracker. It was 2-2, wasn't it, at the interval? And then he just ran away with it. They played five times at the Masters and Allen's won four. So, yeah, I'm not opposing that tip at all. Allen's won that. He was brilliant, actually, in the Champion of Champions. I thought he was so good there, you know, absolutely hammered Judd in the final. So, yeah, I agree. John's hardly shown bad form. He just seems to keep coming unstuck in semis, either against really, really good players. Well, always against really, really good players. I suppose the one in Scotland most recently against Knockon was probably the most disappointing, because he would have been clear favourite for that, whereas else, you know, he's lost to Judd and people elsewhere. But you'd expect it to be close, but sometimes that's a weird one as well. You look at these ones and you think, that's bound to be 11 frames, 10 or 11 frames, but someone runs away with it. But yeah, I think I'd go with you on Allen without great confidence. And then the last one, which might be one of these other, you can't really justify it, but could be a big shock. Well, it would be a big shock if Rob Milkins beat Mark Selby. But Selby, again, a few of these guys have odd Masters records, because Selby started his Masters career just like, oh, this is his tournament. You know, one runner-up, one. Within his first 7 years, he got another title and another runner-up in there. So that was just, you know, ridiculously good up to 2014. But since 2014, he's not been past a quarter-final. And I think when you're looking at the sort of colourful Wikipedia block, which I'm sure many other people listening do, like, a quarter-final looks good. But a quarterfinal in the Masters is only winning one game. So in the last 9 years, he's won four matches and they were all across four different tournaments and gone out in the first round five times. It's confusingly poor for someone who strolled into the Masters at the start of his career and seemed to dominate it. So he, you know, we talk about Ding thinking he's not having great feelings going into the conference, going into Ali Pali. You know, Selby, despite a good pass in this tournament, he'll be similar, because that is a long time to not do particularly well at a venue. Now, having said that, Rob Milkins has never won a game in the Masters, so there's easy to argue the other way as well. He's not played many times in the Masters. I think he's just played twice, and this is his first appearance in his sort of re-emergence as a top player after the last 18 months of just great stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's also very contrasting styles. I'd say they're just at the opposite ends of scales. But you know, I think Selby has proved himself to be vulnerable in this tournament, and Milkins is the kind of guy who can capitalize. He's beaten Selby this year at the Welsh. He should have beaten O'Sullivan at the UK, shouldn't he? And he showed some sort of frailty there to not be able to get over the line. But I think that was because it was Ronnie. And although Selby is, you know, has that effect on people as well, he probably doesn't have it quite as much as Ronnie does on Milkins. So not look to the odds, but I imagined Milkins would be quite a lengthy underdog, 11-4. If I was having a little nibble, I might go on the underdog there.
Well, you make a compelling case. One thing I would say is that I actually spoke to Rob Milkins today. Classic Championship League experience, Rob. He said, I'm just sitting in my car waiting for the next match. I thought, players sitting in their cars feels like quite a Championship League thing, doesn't it? But, he wasn't in a very upbeat mood, actually. I think I don't want to spoil too much about my piece coming up, which will be on Sporting Life in the days to come, but I think he's feeling quite down about his season, which hasn't really got going. I mean, he had that massive high, didn't he, of winning two tournaments, but particularly the Welsh last season. And he can't quite reach those levels for one reason or another. And, you know, he's really going to hit the practice table hard once the Championship League's over. ahead of that match, which obviously, as we speak now, still got a week to go. But he's, I mean, he can be downbeat, Bob. He's that kind at times. But he just sounded to me like he wasn't on the most, you know, confident sounding mood, which makes me inclined to think a bit less of his chances. But again, I sound like a broken record. You know, someone like Selby is so immense. If they're not winning stuff, you have in your mind that they're not quite having the best season. But again, final and two semis, you know, it's not that bad. And, you know, he has miles more Masters experience. No comparison. Yeah, you're right about Mark Selby's record. It's funny, isn't it? Hasn't been past the last eight since reaching the final a decade ago, having done brilliantly for years there in the earlier part of his career. But yeah, Milkins, obviously, he's had Ronnie, Neil, and now Mark Selby. I mean, that's what happens at the Masters. But I had a little joke with him. I think one thing he was at pains to say, and I wouldn't say he left me with a flea in my ear, but he certainly, I think, wanted to make it quite, you know, I didn't mean to word it quite like I did, maybe, but I was sort of saying, you know, you're a quick player, you get on with it, you have a certain style. But he was sort of saying, actually, you know, people think of me a lot, and it's more the way they think of my earlier days. I've actually got a bit more of a tactical side than I'm sometimes given credit for. And also, one thing that, you know, I also definitely agree with, Selby, you know, is not just a, you know, a knuckling down, you know, absolute granite game. He's also a great scorer. So, as ever with snooker and sport in general, there is nuance there. There is a clash in styles, but they can both do a little bit of what the other one's famous for type thing. But listen, that's a bit waffle for me there, Phil. But hopefully a bit of sense as well. And I have to say, for me, I'm going to probably lean towards Selby there. But overall, what can we say? It's just a, you know, mouthwater. They say the afternoon ones are sort of selected for telly, but I was thinking going through them, the evening ones are brilliant as well. There isn't a match there that I'm just not looking forward to. All eight are just going to be roll up in front of the telly, or actually I might be there for a couple of them. Just absolutely electric stuff, full arenas. We're just very lucky, aren't we? These are the times before these really big ones where, just before it gets underway, you're just so excited. You know, it's day after day of action. And it's not quite that morning, noon and night feeling of a crucible without the morning session. But it's a bit like that, isn't it? It's a bit like every day is snooker. It's going to dominate our lives for a week, eh?
Yeah, and like you said, there's no, you know, I suppose there's some that sort of jump off the page a bit more than others, but there's no bad ones. You don't get bad ones. So, yeah, it's constant big fight feels, you know, whenever the afternoon or the evening session starts. And it's so hard to pick a winner. You know, just going through those then, we've made some picks, but not confident about many, if any. So then to pick someone to come through the field, you just wouldn't be surprised. You know, there are one or two people in there who you would be surprised to win it. But 12, probably 10 or 12, not that surprised at all. So fascinating stuff. And you're right, what you said, I can't remember who you were talking about, Neil Robertson, I think you were saying, you can build into it. You know, Judd Trump did not look good in his first two games last season. He did look good in the final, to be fair, but it wasn't really until the final. So these guys are just so good, they can scrap through without playing their best. And yeah, what we will get, when you look at all these games, like I said before, and you think, oh, they're all going to be close, 6-5, 6-4, you always get the odd one where it's like, whoa, he's just smashed him 6-0, 6-1. It will happen. I think Dave Endon made that point. I think he's made it on his own party. I think he made it when he was on with us. That they're all just so good. It's fine margins, and one of them only needs to really click and the other one just slightly struggle, and you've had it. So, yeah, it's going to be really good. I wouldn't like to pick a winner. I think if Mark Allen can get past John Higgins...
Oh, I'm about to say the same thing.
Again, I just had a look at the odds, and he's sort of 14-1, which looks quite generous. I'm sure that would swiftly shrink if he beat Higgins. But, yeah, he's a real force these days, isn't he, for any tournament?
I was thinking the same thing. I genuinely hadn't thought about tournament winner until we're doing this, and I was thinking we should probably do one. I'm sort of leaning towards that. The obvious thing is always Ronnie, because his Masters record is immense, and I think he'll win his first match, and that gets you on the way. And I think it's Neil or Barry for him. So again, I would fancy him for that. And then the semis is a hard man to stop. But yeah, again, the way my mind works, winning two Triple Crowns in a row is really hard. It doesn't happen that often. That would make me lean against Ronnie a bit. But listen, of course he can do it, and I'm sure many will tip him. But yeah, really, that's what you want at the Masters. Loads of big players, hard to call, drama all the way, and we really can't wait for it. Well, we've done nearly an hour, Phil. We'll come to any other business shortly. Should we go through the bit of correspondence we've got in as well?
Yeah.
And I'll first of all turn to John, who says, "Hi all." This is ahead of our Christmas special, actually. But we can talk about Dave in his absence again, can't we? Wanted to say a huge thank you for keeping me company throughout the year. I get so much pleasure from listening to your two podcasts. They complement each other so well. I especially enjoy the in-depth tournament analysis that Nick and Phil provide, alongside Dave's opinions, positivity and encouragement for viewers to write in and share their views, which always get read out. When both podcasts popped up to listen to yesterday, I was torn and didn't know which channel to listen to. So I now listen to the show twice, one from each channel, so you both get a listening figure. It was 6 hours of pure joy. Thanks again, chaps. Have a brilliant Christmas and New Year. Long live snooker. Many thanks, John. We'll appreciate that, John. And is that a bit of purgatory, listening to that twice? I mean, I don't know. It feels like John enjoyed it. That's the main thing. No, I'm only pulling your leg, John. We really appreciate that. That's so sweet, isn't it, to listen to both through our different channels. Really, yeah. really nice.
Yeah, that was really nice. And I can't think there can be many people who've listened to it twice. So you might have been in quite a small club there, but thank you very much. Here's Lars Johansson. Hey, guys. Was going to write a long snooker-related email, but decided against it. Already bombed Dave with a long email a while back. So instead, I just want to say thanks for two great podcasts, the two snooker podcasts that matter, in my opinion. The other podcasts need a comedian to entertain us. You guys are just yourself, and that's all we need and want. So thank you for that. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say about the first half of the season, what's coming up in 2024. Signing off, Merry Christmas and Happy New Snooker Year to you and yours. Cheers, Lars. Thank you very much, Lars.
Great to hear from you, Lars. Much appreciated. Happy New Year to you. David Marsh next. Hello, Nick and Phil. Long-time listener, first-time emailer here. Thank you for such a brilliant podcast. It's such a weekly highlight for me, and I'm sure for many snooker fans. I think the mix you have of tournament coverage and interviews is just right, and I hope you carry on doing this for years to come. I think the John Higgins interview from the summer was probably your most memorable ever episode, and show what top journalists you are, always seeming to know the right questions to ask. If I have one wish, it's that you one day have Mark Selby on the podcast, as I think his story on and off the table is a remarkable one. All the best to you both for 2024. David, well, no promises, but I agree with that. He is a remarkable snooker character, so maybe one day. And thank you, David. Happy New Year to you. And thanks for your kind words.
Yeah, we'd love to have Mark on at some point. Sure. Well, I'm not sure, but I hope we will. This is Mark in Darlington, who's typed out in full Nick style, "Hello, Nick and Phil, and Happy New Year. Just a quick email to share some thoughts I've had on how the game we all love could possibly be improved or made more attractive to a wider audience. Feel free to pass this along to the guys in Matchroom if you think it's worth anything." Now, I've read these already, and I probably won't be passing them along to the guys at Matchroom, but here's Mark's suggestions. The white ball to be made bigger and fitted with a bias weight, as seen in lawn bowls, to allow Mark Williams to roll up to the back of the pack without touching a cushion. Number two, the referee sneaks one fake red ball in the pack, which explodes on impact. Number three, middle pockets to be guarded by opening and closing clowns' mouths on the one side, while the small mechanical windmill slowly turns, partially blocking the other. Number four, players can do anything they feel will put their opponent off while at the table, but they must remain seated. Imagine Dominic Dale singing Welsh hymns at the top of his voice, or Stephen Maguire mean-mugging Anthony Hamilton and whispering myths while he's on the black. Number five, UFC-style weigh-ins before the match. This one made me laugh. Some pushing and drawing a line across the throat with index finger is encouraged. Before you make any final judgment on these, ask yourself, would you tune in to watch? Love the podcast. The best wishes 2024, Mark. Well, yeah, I mean, I can't see too many of them getting over the line. But, you know, we welcome all suggestions here, don't we?
We really do. And, you know, talking about great comedy, I saw a clip that, I don't know, I'm so old now, I might have probably seen it and forgotten, but rather never seen it. But it was Laurel and Hardy. And they were, I think it was Paul, actually, they were playing, but Absolutely brilliant stuff. I only saw that today, so that reminded me of that. But yeah, thank you very much indeed. Well, I don't know if USC style weigh-ins before the match. I just think, I don't know, I can't imagine Graham Dott and Anthony McGill and people like that, these nice well-mannered chaps, getting involved too much with that. But anyway,
I think those you picked a couple of skinny guys there. I don't think they'd be too bothered about the weigh-ins. I think some other guys might not want to do it for other reasons.
Well, yeah, okay, but thank you very much indeed, and appreciate that one, Mark, and Happy New Year to you. Any other business, Bill? We're going to shoot off. You mentioned Macau. There was some Maximans, wasn't there? I had a little look. Selby and Higgins, both knocking in 147s. Mark Selby won the first event. That was a really controversial one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then, as you mentioned, Mark Williams winning the second. But they all seemed to have a good time. I saw amusing Christmas dinner photographs and videos. It looked a bit different from the normal Christmas we'd have over here. But nevertheless, they seem to have a good time. And they're making positive noises generally about going back.
Yeah, for sure. They had a great time. It seems like they were really well looked after. And yeah, I mean, you can see why players want to go and do those things. You know, they earned a load of money, playing in an amazing place, and treated like royalty. You know, great. Everyone would want to do that. Yeah, I saw Ronnie tweet that he was sort of involved with the promotion of it, and there's going to be more. Yeah, we'll see. We don't want any more of these sort of clashes. Hopefully they can just find places where it works. Hopefully there's good dialogue between who organises the tour and who organised those things, and it all can all just piece together nicely, because, yeah, sure, players want to go and play in them, and we don't want to begrudge them that. But we also want all the best players in the best tournaments as well. So, yeah, looks like a lot of fun. I think those guys were happy to forgo their cold British Christmas for that, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Well, here's a story you won't believe, Phil. You're sitting down. That's good news. Jimmy White, right, he's in the balls against Stephen Hendry. He's just got to keep his head, pot a few, and he's over the line. He wins the trophy. He didn't do it. Stephen Hendry won. I know, it takes some believing. But putting my flippant tone aside, that was, of course, the climax of the 900 seniors event we saw on free-to-air television last week in the UK here on Channel 5. It was an Epsom racecourse. It looked a lot of fun, didn't it? It looked well-staged. It looked well-produced. And you can always tell the difference between events that are well-produced on television and those that weren't. Obviously, a bit of money went into it. You could really tell that. Good production and a lot of fun. And, you know, obviously we say well done to all involved. But it had to be Hendry and White, didn't it? It had to be, Phil.
Yeah, that was great. Really dramatic final, even though Hendry looked like he was dominating it. He kept it alive by missing one. Yeah, and Jimmy couldn't quite take advantage. But I can't remember who Jimmy played in his previous game, but he looked really good, made a good break. But yeah, the whole thing looked brilliant. I didn't see it all. I was travelling back from somewhere, but I caught the end and looked superb on telly. Looked like the audience was having great fun. It was a lovely sort of, they nailed the atmosphere of what you want when you don't want quite as far as the shootout, but you want people to be able to be sort of chatting and it not being intrusive. And that was just a nice sort of background hubbub that was great. Yeah. So I've not seen any viewing figures. Hope they were good, and I hope it comes back, because it's got great potential to expand, I think. Obviously, great coverage with the guys, Rachel and Neil and Rianne, JV on the comms. Rob Walker doing his thing. So yeah, no, it's great. So yeah, well done to Jason Francis for dreaming these things up and putting them on. It's good stuff.
And I like that setup. I don't think you'd always want it, or maybe want it that often for regular tournaments. The tiered seating tends to be the one that adds to the whole atmosphere and drama of these things. But that tables thing was quite pleasing on the eye, I think. Everyone's sort of sitting there. Something old school about it. It felt like, I think when you see very, very old clips of, I'm talking about Joe Davis and, you know, very yesteryear, you know, like decades and generations ago, that's kind of some of the setup there. So it's sort of, it harked back to a different age again, I think, which there was something quite very civilized about it, and a bit sort of almost grand, which I quite liked. But anyway, yeah, congratulations to all those involved with that. And well, Phil, the Masters, what can we say? Enjoy it, everyone. These are the moments that we look forward to so much. And it's going to be a great week. Enjoy it yourself Phil, won't you? And keep your thoughts coming to us, folks, especially if you're going to the tournament, talkingsnooker@yahoo.com or tweet us at talkingsnooker. And not a bad first one of the year, Phil. Only got about 484 more episodes to go. we should be there for 24.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks to everyone for sticking with us for another year. I will say thanks to everyone who got in touch with my little bit of family news from the Christmas special. Don't often do stuff like that on there, but I had a lot of lovely messages from people. So very kind of you. But yeah, no, very much looking forward to this one. Feels like we've had a rare, quite long snooker break. Again, I think it's because I watched the darts for a month. But what a way to get back into it. One of the best. Yeah, can't wait. Brussel Lasowski to raise the curtain. What more could you ask for?
Not much more, Phil. And we look forward to the tournament immensely. We'll be back afterwards to wrap it all up, of course, and to review what it will, no doubt. We don't know who's going to win. We don't know what any of the matches, let alone the tournament. But the guarantee is we're going to see great drama, great theatre in front of a big crowd. Exactly what we love about this this dear game. And that's about it for now then, for this first episode of 2024. For your old friends, Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf, cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.